Clock what?
Slow. We can start. Okay, I indicated last time that I would begin with the principles of transliteration. Now, let me make one general statement, and that is that the mode of transliteration that I'm going to talk about is the one which is commonly accepted among Ashkenazim. I cannot even say that's universally accepted for reasons that we may touch upon briefly. It is not the mode of transliteration which is used by Sephardim. I will spend zero time talking about the mode of transliteration used by Sephardim, not because of an inherent bias against Sephardim, heaven forfend, but on the contrary, it's because in this country, I'm well aware of the fact that there's some Bote Din that are Masada Gitin with the Sephardish method transliteration, but I am unaware of any place in which I think it's appropriate to do so, with the possible exception of Deal, New Jersey. I haven't the vaguest idea. I'm sure it's Muchsak, or they have Chupas there. In fact, I was Masada Kedushin once in Deal. Thank heavens I didn't have to write a Shem Laz. The parties were Ashkenazim, and I think that I would have been forced to write with a Svardish method rather than an Ashkenazic one. And that's because it depends upon the Mokum. And Mokum becomes Muchsak for certain things, including the mode of transliteration. Now, there is a concept of Shtei Bote Din Bir Achas, where you have different kihila structures, and each one has its own particular practice. That is true in Eretz Yisrael. There's an interesting tshuva in Chelik Beis of the Abi Omer, if I remember, Seven Ezra Simchov Ches, Rebbe Avadya Yosef is even mefakpek in the kashrus of a ksuba, if I remember, I don't think it was a get, maybe it was a get, written for Svardim by an Ashkenazi using the Ashkenazic methodology of transliteration. But that's because in Eretz Yisrael, they were clearly muchzak as two separate gehillas. In the United States, they were not muchzak as two separate gehillas. How you're muchzak as two separate gehillas goes way beyond anything that we have to talk about today. Rav Moshe in one shuva says that the only way we muchzak as two separate gehillas is you have an independent shchita. There is now shchita Beis Yosef in New York, under the control of Ashkenazi. They do not have an independent shechita, to the best of my knowledge. It's happened, I don't know about. In Deal, there's no shechita altogether. In both kehillos, there's no shechita anymore. There's no shechita in New York, period, anymore. Once upon a time, there was. How you create two separate kehillos in the absence of two separate Bote Din, I don't really know, and it's not really my problem. What I can say is that until very, very, very recently, there was a hiatus of years that go into the three figures, in which, to all intents and purposes, there were no Sephardim in New York. The so-called Spanish and Portuguese synagogue has a membership, if my informants are giving me correct information, the vast majority of them are Ashkenazim, not Sephardim. But be that as it may, I'm not going to talk about the Sephardic transliteration at all. Another interesting point, I certainly recommend that you look at this. You should know about these things, even if you don't have to be proficient in all of the details. But in the last volume of Torah Sheba Al Peh, there was a transcription of a shir by Rav Avadya Yosef, in which he records certain anecdotes of his youth, including when he sat as a junior member of a Beis Din, and the Ashkenazim wanted to passel get because they didn't understand the Sephardish Havara, the Sephardish system of transliteration, etc., etc. I'm not giving it to you for these little tidbits. He there does give you some of the clothing. Frankly, I don't know of any simple source that I could send you to that would give you the principles of the Sephardic transliteration. The best, I'm sure there must be, but Rav Henkin made this little kuntres for Ashkenazim. I'm sure there must be such a counterpart for Sephardim, but I never came upon it. All I know is what I see in the tshuvas and here, there, and the other place, and you can pick up a little bit about what their system is. But that's all beside the point. So again, the system is going to be the system of transliteration of Ashkenazim. As I pointed out a moment ago, it's not necessarily uniform among all Ashkenazim, but we have a kind of a standard form, and where it's muhzak, there are no deviations. Now, it became muhzak basically in terms of who got there first. And the people who were in New York first were Lithuanian and Russians. The Polish, Lithuania, etc. came afterwards. And there's a very interesting shuv in the Beis Ovi, Rabbi Libus, who was not a Litvak, who says, they beat us to it. We've been here first. We would have done things our way, but we're stuck. We're stuck with the system that they have put in place. So let me try to talk about the systems for transliteration. I indicated last time why and in what circumstances you will need the transliteration. First and foremost, for writing the names of cities where the city is not yet muhzak, the ksivas ksubis, forget about Gita. One point that I should make at the very beginning. You never, ever write the Shem Amedina. I cringe every time I go to a chuppah in Brooklyn and I hear somebody reading a ksuba, Brooklyn, New York. There is no city called Brooklyn, New York on planet Earth. There is a city called New York, there's a city called Brooklyn, and there is a city called Brooklyn, which happens to be Bimedinas, New York. And if you're writing it properly, although not according to form, you write Mosa Brooklyn, Bimedinas, New York, or Brooklyn Mosa. We'll talk about that afterwards. And Medinas, New York, however, this is Loi Mina Mekubal. You do not write the Shem HaMedina in a get or in a ksuba. I can give you now a source because I wrote it. The reason for this, if you look at the Sivas HaHalacha, I couldn't find any place to cite, so I had to produce my own source. I am absolutely convinced that the reason is really very simple. You don't even use it in a get where you need simonim. The standard simon is the river. It never occurred to anybody to use the country name as a simon. And the reason is, to me at least, perfectly obvious. And I'll show it to you. I'll Socratic method you into this. Where is Munkács?
Hungary.
Where?
Hungary.
Munkács is in Hungary? Oh, good, take your pick. Everybody knows that Munkács is in Hungary. So you take out a globe, you will see that today Munkács is not Hungary. That's because borders shift. You heard about the Louisiana Purchase, I presume. Now it's part of the United States. Once upon a time it wasn't. Alaska was once part of Russia. The Shem HaMedina changes. It changes constantly as a result of war, what have you. Now, the Shem HaMedina changes, and therefore what kind of a simon is it? But it's a simon which isn't going to mean very much. Is it Hungary? Is it Czechoslovakia? There's no Czechoslovakia anymore. Is it Slovakia? Or is it the Czech Republic? Or is it Russia? Who knows what? There's no Russia anymore. I mean, yes, there's no Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but there is a Russian Republic. You get the point. The point is that you can't use the Shem HaMedina as any kind of a simon because the wars happen all the time. Territory changes from one place to another, so you have to look for other simonim. Therefore, there is no place called Brooklyn, New York. I will not say it passes with the other, but it is a clear giveaway to anybody in the audience whether the Mesaba Kiddushin is a Yudea B'tiv Gittin V'Kiddushin or whether he isn't. It's as simple as all that. Unfortunately, there are people who should know better, but they, for some reason or other, they never became proficient in Hilchus Gittin, and hence it doesn't transpose itself into the Ksuba. So the principle is the city. Now, I know very well, yes?
Do you write Brooklyn or New York?
You write Brooklyn, that was the next sentence. I know very well that there is no longer a city called Brooklyn. Is there a city called Noamon? Noamon, never heard of Noamon? I'll try Kushto. Where's Kushto? Where's Kushto? Louder. Kushti is in Istanbul. I thought somebody was saying Constantinople. Last I looked, there was no Constantinople. I had the experience of being at a conference in Constantinople, and the chairman found it necessary to come over and whisper into the ear of every speaker that we know that you rabbis call this city Kushta or Constantinople. Please be very, very careful because our hosts will be insulted. It's Istanbul. The Turks and the Greeks didn't get along very well. Malchus Makpida, he didn't want you to use the name. That's okay, whatever. He said, you know, great democracy we have here. Or whatever's going on. But the principle regard to Gitna Kedushin is that in cases where the Malchus Makpidus is a clear exception to the rule. But today, in Istanbul, they no longer write Kushto. Go to the library, you will not find a single sefer that's published in Istanbul. They're all published in Kushto. Now, if it would be a printing press in Kushto today, and the government was looking over your shoulder, they would still be writing Kushto on the Shahrblatt. Now, the principle is that once it becomes muhzak bein ha-yehudim, it remains that way. We're traditionalists. It was called that once, it's called it forever. And you use the name by which it is known among Jews, in quotation marks, which means among Mesadri Gittin and Mesadri Kiddushin. In the Beis Medrash Shemveif, I don't know how many of these cities got into your package, in Amsterdam, there's still Botitin that writes Amstel Ledam. Why Amsterdam is called Amsterdam? Amsterdam is called Amsterdam because it's named after the beer, which is Amstel beer. Amstel beer is the river Amstel, and the city got its name from the river, Amstel Ledam. And somehow later, some of the letters got lost and became Amsterdam. But the Jews are still writing Amstel Ledam. V'chule, v'chule, v'chule. Now, in some places it changed. I haven't been in Petersburg recently, but I once had the experience of being the Sadr to get Leningrad, and they were writing Leningrad, not Petersburg, and I suspect it was because the Malchus was Makpid on Ksivas Gittin altogether, this was some of that stuff, but certainly not to write Petersburg in those days, but now I'm sure it's back to Petersburg. And you also do not use abbreviations. I had recently a document that came from St. Louis, and the Rav, the rabbi, was very, very frum. He wouldn't write saint, so he abbreviated Samach Tes with a dot. That's not how you write a ksuba in St. Louis. You write it out. No abbreviations, and if it's the name of the city, it's the name of the city. No abbreviations. So now, with regard to...
You mentioned the Petersburg.
Yes.
That doesn't have the saints.
Jews call it Petersburg. In St. Louis, they don't call it Louis. The Jews in St. Louis call it St. Louis. And in Notre Dame, if there's a kollel in it now, they call it Notre Dame. I don't know what. But in Petersburg, they call it Petersburg. I think they're going to probably also call it Petersburg for a while. It was named after a king who later became a saint. I'm not interested in history, but I think the Goyim also called it Petersburg. Now, that may have been only later when they weren't so frum, I'm the biggest thing. Now, until very, very recently, every printed ksuba in this country had the phrase, share by America Hatsaponis. Now, it's true that continents don't change their names. They don't change their location, at least in recorded history. But you don't write a share by America Hatsaponis. The person I discovered who did that. The person who did that was described by Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger in an article that appeared in Shemer Tzion HaNemon as Meire Echod by America She'eino Yudea B'tiv Gittin V'Kiddushin. I don't know. I know his name. I'm not going to tell you his name. It's not important. I'm sure he was a nice man. But he was a Meir Echad. This was the early 1800s. There were no rabbanim in America then. And he did whatever he did, where he got this bright idea to write an American Swingers, I don't know. It certainly can't possible, but it doesn't belong there. It shouldn't be there. Now, okay, so you, and we'll talk later about the word Mosse, but in terms of transliteration, you use the name as it's Muchzak Eitzel HaYehudim, not the way the Goyim pronounce it. We live in a city which is called New York, in case you didn't know it. This is not New York. The Goyim got their mispronunciation from the Jews. Jews call this New York, the same way that they call a certain street on the Lower East Side a Houston Street and not Houston Street. It's simply a mispronunciation of unlettered and untutored Americans who don't know the English language. But their excuse is that they got it from the Jewish immigrants. Now, if you were to ask a linguist how to, somebody who's a bookie in these things, he would tell you you pronounce it New York, and therefore you should be transliterating it Nun Yud Vav, New. However, that's not how we write it. We transliterate with the, quote, errors, quote, close quote, because that's how it's Mosak Eitzel HaYehudim. The result is that you spell New York Nun Vav Aleph, space, half a space to be precise, Yud Aleph Resh Kuf. Now, that didn't come easily. If you will look in this Medrashem Ve'ever, you will discover there are probably half a dozen different ways of spelling New York. I remember Kadhavina Talia, I was relatively young in the yeshiva, and Reuven Gazovsky, Zacharin Lavrocha, was reported to have come back from Agudas Rabbonim meeting in a fury. And why was he so angry? Because they had a meeting and they decided how they were going to spell New York in Gittin and Subis. And they announced, put the motion on the table, and they asked for a show of hands. He didn't, to the best of my knowledge, he didn't have a firm opinion with regard to any of this. But you don't decide matters of halacha with a show of hands by people on the spot who may or may not have done the research and the investigation. And this is not an area in which everybody gets an equal vote. But in any event, they were machzik the name, at least the spelling, as New York, which I think is correct, incidentally. There are other places that they were machzik ways that are incorrect. And I'll talk about that in a moment. What's the difference? Once it's Muchzak, it's Muchzak, and that's how it's known, Eitzel HaYehudim, and you're stuck with it. One minor point, and that is, New York is always on a single line. You don't write New on one line and York on another line. And you leave the shear of a moli is ktano, which is defined as the shear of half a letter between them. That is our way of indicating a hyphen. The same is true with a name like Benzion. Benzion is one name. You spell it as two separate words with a shear of a moli is ktano, half a letter between, on a single line. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, fine. Half a space is moli is ktano?
Yeah, that's the accepted shear of a moli is ktano. Okay, now.
Any place that needs to be hyphen, that would be normally hyphenated or saying it has to be.
I gave you the example of Benzion. People, modern usage is often to hyphenate Benzion. You don't use a hyphen in the two.
But really saying there's a moly on
one line. Right. Show it's one name. Right. Because otherwise it's read as two names. It's not two names, it's one name. His name is Benzion, not Benzion. Okay. So much for the cities in general. Let me then talk about some of the rules. One other point I should make. Last time I did point out that you need this Hashem HaMishpacha, which I urge you not to write. And also for Hashem Laz, when you're using the Hashem Laz, because there is no Hebrew name. And remember, I think I emphasized this last time, that you don't assign Hebrew names. And you need to know how to transliterate for the purpose of the Shem Laz. Now, let me make just some general rules. They're all there in Rav Henkin's Little Kuntres. English is not a phonetic language. Transliteration is entirely phonetically. You do not have double letters. Exceptions, there are exceptions to every rule. You look in Beis Medrashim Ve'ever, Buffalo. Somebody was not to give it to Bays. But you're stuck with it, so it's got two pays. But in a new place, you don't write a double pay. In somebody's name, if there's a double letter, a double consonant, you don't spell out the double consonant. Silent letters are omitted. The English TH, for example, is transliterated as a TS. Knoxville has a K as the initial letter. It's not Knoxville. There's no kuf in the transliteration. What else? Biblical names. Biblical names are, well, again, we're not dealing with Gittin. Biblical names, a person's name is Avraham, everybody calls him Abraham. You don't write Avraham HaMuchuna Abraham. You just write Avraham alone. If he didn't have a Hebrew name and his name is Abraham, so you write Abraham phonetically, Rav Henkin maintains that if you wrote the Shem Kodesh, spelled like the Shem Kodesh, it's also okay. But the general practice is to transliterate even a biblical name, unless it was given as a Shem Kodesh as well as a Shem Arisa. You will most likely come upon this with one name and one name only, and that is the English name Ruth. There are many girls whose name is Rachel or who knows what, and in English they call themselves Ruth or Ruth or whatever. So that again, if it's a Shem Arisa, of course it's with a Tov and not a Tes. If it's a Shem Laz, because it wasn't the Shem Arisa, it should get a Tes. And for Rav Henkin, if you write it with a Tov, it's also Uloi Ifsi. Having said that, I think we can dispense with those little things. There are a couple of letters in English which present problems. One of those is the name Philip. Philip is written Pei Yud Lamed Yud Pei for a very simple reason. You know, by Pei I mean an ordinary Pei, not what you call today a Pei Sofit or what have you. The reason is really very simple. You know the principle is at the end of a letter, it's always the Pei, the Tzadik, the Nun look differently from when they're in the middle of a letter. In the case of a Pei, it's always pronounced a Fei, without a Dogish. And since this, it's not Philif, but Philip, and if you had it with a final Fei, it would be read Philip. You spell it Pei, Yud, Lamed, Yud, Pei, and it's even though it's the end of a letter, it's the standard Pei, not the final Pei. The real problem, and here's where you'll have different practices, is the English J, or G, depending, J, the J sound. Sometimes it's a George, sometimes it's J, like in Joseph. How do you write that? For lack of any better way to describe the difference in practice, the Lithuanians, the Russians, Rav Moshe, Rav Henkin, use a Dalid Zayin for a J, period, full stop, just two letters, on the principle that you never use three letters in Lashon Kodesh to translate a single sound. The Polish, the Chassidim, whatever, they almost uniformly use a Dalid Zayin Shin. Today, my impression is that most Mesabri Gittin were trained, or who knows what, they're using Dalid Zayin Shin instead of Dalid Zayin. Reb Moshe Rav Henkin never did, and with that I rest the case. But these are clearly two separate practices, okay? Now, so much for consonants. In terms of vowels, the aleph is usually used in place of a comments, an ayin in place of a segel, with the exception of the end of a word. And this becomes significant. At the end of a word, a segel, or what you and I would call a segel, is spelled with an aleph and not with an ayin and not with a hey. This is not a Morgan journal. In the Morgan journal, or its new incarnation, the Allgemeine journal, A word like Bela will be spelled with an ayin at the end. That's not the way you spell it. You spell it with an aleph at the end. And you will hear a Kala complaining that she spells it not with an ayin at the end. I forgot about that already. Even Bela, she's spelling with a hey at the end, as if it would be Hebrew. It's a shemlaz, and you have to know what's a shemlaz and what's not a shemlaz. And sometimes it's not easy. Last night, yesterday afternoon, the Masadar Kedushin decides to call an hour before the chuppah. The name was, if I can remember the name, Etit. I never heard the name before. They made it up. The big problem was, is it a Shem Kedush or a Shem Laz? You spell it with a Tof at the end, you spell it with a Tes at the end. Of course, the Kala has been spelling it with a Tof at the end all her life. She thought she made up a Hebrew name or something. There are other names that become problematic. Ilana. How do you spell Ilana? Don't answer. The Israelis spell it with a hey at the end. I hear tell that Ilana is the feminine form of Elon. Is Elon a Hebrew word? No, it's not. It's a shemlaz. Elon's Aramaic. It's a shemlaz. Eitz is what you call it in Russian. Elon is a shemlaz, so Ilana gets an aleph at the end. Lani has died. So what? Lots of things with the Mishnah in Tanakh. My assumption, I'm not an etymologist, but my impression is that place as simple as Jastrow. If he gives you a Greek word for it, you know it's a Shemlaz. Not that he's the place of gospel on these things. But I'm willing to be convinced differently. My presumption is that, how do I know what's my presumption? Because the Targum, whatever it says, it translates to the Elam. So that's why I presume it's a shemlatz. Or it's an Aramaic word, not a Hebrew word. So Mimeli Lana is also a shemlatz. Now, I may be wrong. I have no idea. You have to ask the Balei Haloshen. I'm not a Baal Loshen. But these things you have to find out before the chuppah. If I haven't said it before, I'll say it now. I think they teach you in practical rabbinics, you're supposed to have a prenuptial conference. You should have it for lots of reasons, not the least of which is to find out what the names are, so that if you have problems, you have plenty of time to be mayan and do the research. Yes?
Okay, I'm just saying that at the end of the anything at the end of the word is an aleph?
Everything in a shemlaz, not a shem, a sorrow gets a hey at the end. A shemlaz gets an aleph at the end, regardless of how you pronounce it, unless, says Ramesha, you hear the segel so clearly that it has to be a segel and nothing else. They take the position that the segel sound at the end of a word is an elliptic comment. It's really a comment, but you're saying it too quickly so you don't hear it properly. So that's what he says. If you're Matkikarbe, and everybody knows that, I suppose, the Dogish is on the last syllable. I don't know very many names like that. But the general rule is that since it's a shemlaz, you're treating it as if it would be a comments, which doesn't get a hay, but gets an aleph at the end. Now, again, none of this is cast in concrete in the sense that just because you find a name in somebody's list, that it means it's always pronounced that way. I think Rav Henkin has a kind of Surgeon General's warning, a disclaimer, before he gives you the list of names and spellings. It depends upon the Havara. How do people pronounce it? People can have one name and pronounce it a half a dozen different ways. And it's all phonetics. You have to write it the way you hear it. I'll give you one example. Silent letters are to be omitted. I once had a second get. And the first get, the woman's name was Barbara, and the Masadar HaGet wrote it with three L's, as if there would have been a comets between the second base and the Reish. Now, you and I don't pronounce Barbara that way. We pronounce Barbara without any sound in between. It's spelled with an extra A in between. I was convinced that this was a simple error. Does it possible? Doesn't it possible? That's the issue. I was, whatever little I know about this, I learned from a friend. I was with Sadler Deaton for a while, I think, in, and I raised the issue about whether there's a Sophie Psul in the first get. I don't think it passes. But to me, it, you know, this was a race in the first get. He took it for granted that, of course, she called herself Barbara, not Barbara. Now, maybe it was Lamed Schluss on the first Masada, I think. But it wasn't made out of whole cloth. There could be, remember, he was not a native English speaker. And if you told him in the South, they call these girls Barbara instead of Barbara, like Barbara and barbarians. Yeah, it's true. So you know, it all depends upon what you hear. And you have to know the language to know what you're hearing. It's, you know, it depends. So none of this, in terms of the names that you find in any list, the kvius is not in concrete and depends upon how you actually hear it. Okay? Yes?
Do you go based on the way the natives would pronounce it?
Would you, do we,
like Barbara would, like somebody who speaks English natively would say Barbara, but somebody who's an immigrant, I've heard, would say Barbara.
I hear tell that on the other side of this island, right here, that there are people who still have the name A-D-O-L-P-H, as in Adolf Schickelgruber. Now, how do you write that? I hear tell that on those couple of blocks, they pronounce it Adolf. I also know that if I go south in Manhattan, and somebody picks up a document that has this name on it, he pronounces it Adolf, not Adolf. That makes a grave difference in terms of transliteration, as we'll see in a moment. Now, which do you use? Adolf, which is what his wife calls him, or do you use Adolf, which is what his boss calls him at work? Good question. I'm not going to be machria right now. Clearly, if everybody in the world besides, I don't know, besides the telephone company calls him Adolf instead of Adolf, and his name is Adolf. But what do you do if he sits at a desk and once in a yovel somebody calls him Adolf because otherwise his name is Mr. X, Y, or Z, and his wife calls him Adolf 20 times a day? You go both rave people or both rave times that you're called by the name. I'm not going to be a Macriol child right now. But that's, I mean, in the get, you would be writing Adolf, on the, Adolf the Mystery Adolf, or Adolf the Mystery Adolf, and have no wish to the first, which would be second. That's why you have to spend more than a few minutes we're spending on the Sheamus, and why you got to know all these things before you sit down to be Masada or Kedushin. That's not time to raise the Sheamus. Yes.
Is
Sheamus
Kodesh versus Sheamus Lazarus something that's used as a name in Tanakh, or something that just appears as a word?
I suspect that
Orly.
Sorry?
Orly.
Orly. One word or two words. With a Molly's Tana. I suspect that if somebody would suddenly decide to use Barak, or in their pronunciation, Barak, as a first name, Kemare HaBarak, and they suddenly decided that he's a burst of lightning in their lives, and they want to call him by that name, I suspect... Well, there is a Baruch in time. Let's see how much I know. Okay. There is already a Baruch. All right. Good. I suspect if you took such a word, you would have it in a Hashem. It's not in the Shemitsky. I suspect that it would happen to the Hashem Kodesh, not Hashem Laz, because you took a word in Moshe Kodesh and turned it into a name. Fine. Okay. Let me go back to the translation.
The Hashem Kodesh and Hashem Laz. There was Issachar, Oscar, Adolf, Iblav.
No, it's not very close at all. Oscar is not close to any Shem Kodesh that I know about.
Issachar
is not Oscar. Issachar is not Oscar. It's a different name. Issachar in King James called Issachar Issachar. But Oscar is not Issachar. It's a different name totally. Even if it, you know, it's different, it's a totally different name. Yes.
Some towns that biblical names have been transliterated or anglicized, like Bethlehem, Babylon,
Jericho.
Or you want to write a get, you want a ksuv in Bethlehem. You write Beis Lechem. What's wrong with Beis Lechem? Jews call it Beis Lechem.
No, in America.
Oh, in America. Well, that's you're back to Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin, for whatever Rav Henkin would say for a name like Ruth, he would say for Bethlehem, New Hampshire. And if you write Beis Lechem, I suppose he would say that it's okay. We would not do that. Now, in Beis Lechem, we are not going to write Bethlehem. It's ours. It's called Beis Lechem. It's not called Bethlehem. But in New Hampshire, it's a Shem Laz. Never had a Shem Kodesh. They didn't give it a Shem Kodesh as their reason. When the pilgrims came, they called it Bethlehem. They didn't call it Beis Lechem. They couldn't speak Hebrew. All right, let me go to the other vowels. A chirik and a tzeirik is transliterated with one yud. Leib is spelled lamid yud beis, not the way it's spelled in the Allgemeiner Journal. How do you spell it in the Allgemeiner Journal? You don't have to know. But if you spell it lamid yud yud beis, what does it mean? How do you pronounce it? Leib. Leib is not leib. Now be careful. What do they call this young man? Do they call him leib or they call him leib? And this is a shinui. If you write lamid yud yud beis where it should be lamid yud beis, you got a different cousin. It's not him. And if you have a Hungarian who everybody calls Leib, and you write Lamed Yud Beis, you've got problems. The same is true with women's names like Kreindl and Kreindl, Shane and Shina, Bela and Baila. You multiply them ad infinitum. Okay, the two yuds is used as a sign of a patach followed by a chirik. Okay, now the U sound is generally transliterated with a simple Vov and an O. The Cholom is usually spelled with an Aleph followed by a Vov. That's the, you know, the general principle. To go back to Adolf, of course, if it's Adolf, then you're using an Aleph. If it's Adolf, then it's like Leib, A, Aleph, U. The difference is there a yud or is there a yud? And those are two different names. Okay, now whether I'll be a shinui mamish or not, we'll worry about that some other time. Now, one other little point that I should make, and that's with regard to the names of fathers. A person can generate any name for himself that he chooses. You can decide to call yourself Mickey Mouse if you want to, or Donald Duck. And not only can be masik the new shem for purposes of halacha, but as long as you don't do it for purposes of fraud, you don't need a court order, you can do it even between the malchus. That's called a shinui hashem. You can make a shinui hashem, whether the original name is the shtakach, not the shtakach. I think I spoke last time about the fact that we do not generally consider the shem arisa to be the shtakach, when the shem arisa was a shem kodesh, which was given to quote the BNC and for dvarim shem kedusha. And I think I told you that among the Polish, Chassidim, whatever, they were very quick to say that the Shem is the Shem Mishtakach if it wasn't being used. Now, the problem is this. And again, if you don't use the Shem Arisa, and you, if there's ever a suffix with regard to what name they gave in the bris, forget it, it doesn't exist. Use the laws. Make sure you transliterate correctly. If you use the Shem Arisa, which is in doubt or Mishtakach, you've got serious problems. If you use a Shem Laz, it's even kosher l'chatchila. It's no big deal. As long as you have a name which is a proper name. In Iksub, we don't write all the names. In the get, you write all the names. But as long as you have one name that is correct, it's fine. So what do you do when you got sveikis with the Shem Ba'av? And the father, or you went and you were machzik a Shem for the father. And this happens. I'll tell you where I found it. This was Moscow, not Leningrad. It came time to sign again. And we have two Aidim, two, they're Bali Tshuva, they're fine, wonderful young men. And I incidentally, I do this at a ksuba also. I ask the Aidim their names, the father's name, and I give them usually as a napkin. I ask them to please sign their name on the napkin. I don't want them signing the names directly. So they practice. You practice signing your name and teach them how to sign the word Ayin Dalet afterwards. Fine. Yeah, that's not my problem right now. So the Adim are about to sign. I ask him his name. So he tells me, the first tells me his name is Chaim Ben Avraham. Fine. Then I ask the second aide, what's his name? He tells me his name is Shimon Ben Avraham. And I look at them and I ask, are you brothers? And they said, no. But no, and I caught a look between the two. I knew Yesh Devarim Begad. I realized something isn't kosher here. So I asked him, I made a drisha v'kir. I asked the first one, your father's name is Avraham. Is that the name they gave your father at his bris? I should have known better. He turns red and said, my father never had a bris. So I said, so who gave him the name Avraham? He says, nobody gave his name Avraham. So I said, why you tell me your father's name is Avraham? Because he's Chaim ben Avraham. Who said that you're Chaim ben Avraham? Hazikinim bebet haKnesset. And the second, the same story. They're both Bali Tshuva. The fathers didn't have any names. And when I insisted that he sign Chaim ben Vladimir, he again thought he was dealing with some kind of reform rabbi who knows what. But, I mean, he was already Masik a name for his father. He was Masik the Shem Avraham for his father. Can you be Masik a name for your father? He decided he's going to give his father's name Avraham without a bris. So it turns out that there are three shittas. One sheet that says you can't. The other says you can do it only if he's alive. Another says you can do it only if he's dead. without Svari, I wasn't about to be Machria, particularly when to sign Chaim ben Vladimir Skarsha Lechatchila, provided you don't spell Vladimir correctly. Separate problem. Okay, but why am I talking about being Masik Hashem Av? It becomes problematic in adoptions, and I do want to spend a few minutes talking about adoption. Now, in the materials that were distributed, there's a whole kuntras dealing with adoption, which really I'm not supposed to be talking about. This is issues. I don't know if that's it. It's psuli, yuchsin, have nothing to do with issues, I presume. In any event, the first couple of years I did it anyway, but it turns out to take too long, we'll never do anything else. Suffice it to say that if you're dealing with an adopted child, you have a serious problem of halacha. A child who's adopted through an adoption agency, which is the case with most adoptions. Fortunately, unfortunately, there are very few adoptions anymore, other than of children that come from foreign countries, and everybody knows they're goyim. That's wonderful. Halacha is wonderful. Goy is a goy, you're a geyer. If you can't be a geyer, I'm not going to talk about that at all, because people aren't shomer mitzvah, I'm not sure they use it. But that's beside the point. I'd leave that for the Gators. This country, going back, it's before the pill and after the pill. Before the pill, there were babies available for adoption in this country. And the so-called Jewish adoption agencies claimed that they were providing their Jewish clients with Jewish babies. Whether that was true in 10% of the cases, or in 100% of the cases, or in 0% of the cases, I don't know and I don't care. The tansis of the hour that I'm not giving you is that the adoption agencies have no nemonis. Period, full stop. Now that's a cool gedayim, because if they had nemonis, you'd be dealing with a shtuki at the very best, and probably a masufi, and you'd have all kinds of psula yichus. To say he's a goy means that, in principle, he can be Megayer, he's a sorrel kosher. If he's a Jew and you don't know who the parents are, you've got problems on your hands. And if you're ever involved in an adoption of a Jewish child, be careful to prevent those problems. You head them off at the pass by interviewing the mother, and somebody has to have a record of the fact that she says the kosher and the valti. You should have a record of any male relatives or female relatives if it's the opposite gender of the adopted child, so that later there's no problem of an ochnes achese v'chule. So that if you're dealing with a non-Jewish child, either one that's known to Mitzvahs is non-Jewish, or that in terms of halacha is non-Jewish, you've got no problems, except you have the worst problems. you have no problems because here you do write Ben Avrom Avinu. He's a ger. You have to write either Pliny Hager or Pliny Ben Avrom Avinu. Look in the Beishmul Sim Kufkov Tes Sifkot Mechov Gimel. I think that's where it is. Well, that's not that one. It's Kufkov Tes Sifkot Lamites. Lamites. Whether the Beis Shmuel holds that the Be'evet, if you don't indicate that it's a Ger, it's possible to Be'evet or not, I will leave it for you to decide. Look in the Get Poshut, you will see the Rachmanim who do say explicitly that the Ksub or the Get is possible to Be'evet for the simplest of all reasons. I take this, it says Reuven ben Shimon, and this isn't Reuven ben Shimon, because this is a Ger. And a Ger is the Reuven ben Avrom Avinu, or Reuven Hager, or something of the sort. If he didn't indicate that he's a Ger, then he's somebody else. So that's in the case, but why is it simple, why is it so difficult? Because the parents aren't very happy. They don't like this. Now, this is, again, adoption is not the topic. I don't want to talk about adoption. I just know one thing. And that is that you can't live a lie. You know, the emes is the best shekel, is the Yiddish expression. The truth is the best lie. The pendulum now, in the last 10 years, has swung. There was a time when the mode in this country was closed adoption. You didn't disclose the identity of natural parents, either to the adopted parents or to the child. In extreme cases, they never told the child was adopted. Now it's swung back, and people are encouraging more openness, even in cases where the birth mother was assured anonymity. Court records are being unsealed, and people are able to trace their ancestry, their lineage, their yichus, etc., etc. I think in general it's a good thing. I'm not sure that it's fair to these people who are promised differently, but it's psychologically, I'm convinced that psychologically it's healthier, and after all, halacha knows what it's doing. In terms of halacha, this is very, very significant. I'm not now going to talk about childless of yichud and people of Yenishu, v'chulei, but for all kinds of reasons, you have to know who the parents are, if for no other reason, for writing the ksuba and writing the get. So when we have a non-Jewish adoption, I've got no problems. I think you have to indicate that the child is not Jewish. And what you read out loud, I couldn't care less. But the document should say, Ben Avrom Avinu, Bas Avrom Avinu v'chulei. The problems and the serious problems will arise when you're dealing with a Jewish child who has been adopted and you're able to be kiveya that it is a Jewish child. I don't know how often this occurs. I have had exactly one such case. When it presented a problem in terms of the ksuba, it was a fine, pentera, etc., etc. And you know, for all kinds of reasons, this was a social problem so far as the family was concerned, but everybody was from, so they ask a shayla, and they do what you tell them, and in this particular case, the ksuba was written, and there was a nosy parker of a relative who was a prominent rabbi who only wanted to know what I was writing there. And the family didn't want this man to know. I don't know exactly what the details were. I suspect that he didn't know that it was an adopted child, but had his suspicions. And he never found out, I assure you. But the problem is, and now what do you do? B'di'evet, the Ramban Kum says, Serach Bas Osher, says the Ramban, it wasn't Bas Osher at all, it was Bas Eshes Osher, but Hamagadol Yosim B'derech Beisei Ma'alo V'Kosev Kilu Yolda, or Yolda to be grammatical. So, Ramban says that it's literal, the Chumash tells me it's Bas Osher. So, B'di'evet, if you write it that way, it certainly can't possibly. Now, the problems will arise with regard to lechatchilas. What do you do lechatchila in a case of that nature? Do you write the Shem HaMagadol as the real father, or don't you? You also have this problem, you're going to have it more often, in the case of a Jewish mother, but a non-Jewish father. The father's a good, and he's not the father in terms of halacha. See, when you transliterate his English name, she is not, she's not Dina Bas John or Jacob or what have you. He's not her father. So, what do you do in those cases? Now, I'll give you basically four shittas and loads of variations within each one of those shittas, and then we'll see if we can figure out what to do when we're all finished. The first comes from the Likutei Meir. It's Rabbi Meir Grosnas. He was a dying in the London Besdin. He wrote a little sefer, Likutei Meir, on halachas of adoption, v'chulei. He thinks you should write Reuven ben Shimon amigadloi, putting the word amigadloi in parentheses, or it gives you an option. Or Reuven ben Shimon shegidloi. Shegidloi in parentheses. He is using the name of the adopted father, and he's just spelling out that he is adopted by saying Hamagadloi or Shegidloi. I don't recommend that for a number of reasons. Number one, parentheses are not min hamakubal. We don't use punctuation in stories of any kind. Now, having said that, I think I pointed out last time that Ramesha seems to have used parentheses at least in one case. That was the case I told you about, this girl, Susan, who goes to Eretz Yisrael and she becomes Zara, and everybody's calling her Zara, and he wants, Ramesha says, to write Susan in the ksuba in parentheses, and I have the impression he meant in Latin letters, which is altogether bizarre. But there, and I'm like, just for sake of intellectual honesty and completeness, I can't say that there is no source that would accept parentheses, as does the Likutei Meir, it just seems to also. But nobody else who writes about these problems is willing to accept the notion of parentheses. So you've got one way, you write simply Reuven ben Shimon. You don't have to use the parentheses. You can say Reuven ben Shimon shegidloi or hamagadloi, or better, shegidloi kibain, I would prefer if you're going to use that method. But I think there are better ways. Then comes what Reb Moshe recommends. Now, there are a number of different tshuvas in Reb Moshe, and I won't say there's a contradiction between them, but they're not all besigma in Echod, and it's presumably because he thought any one of these is acceptable. You just have to adapt them to the circumstances. In one case, he indicates that you write Pliny de Miskeri ben Pliny. Now, again, this comes not from Ramesha, but it comes, if I remember correctly, from the Chelkis Yaakov. Now, the problem is that if you write Pliny the Miskeri, you know what Miskeri is. Miskeri is what you use in a get when you have two separate names, and they're both either Shem Kodesh or Shem Laz. He's got one name, some people call him by another name. So he's Pliny the Miskeri. He's also called Pliny. If you write Pliny the Miskeri ben Pliny, you're in trouble, because your problem is that the father is not the real father. He's just called the father. And if you write Pliny the Miskeri ben Pliny, I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to say he's Pliny who is called the son of Pliny. But nobody calls him the son of Pliny. In this country, we don't use patronyms alone. The Gabbai in Shul uses Pliny, Ben Pliny. But nobody is ever called Ben Pliny in this country. And to say Pliny, the Miskeri Ben Pliny, is to say, you know something? They call him Pliny, and they call him also Jacob's son. Nobody ever calls him Jacob's son. Either call him Reuven Ben Yaakov, Reuven the son of Jacob, or you call him something else. So the way to do that, to correct, if you want to use that method, is to call him Pliny, the Miskeri Pliny, Ben Pliny. He's called. The Gabbai's been calling him up for Aliyahs, Ploini ben Ploini Hashem Magadlai, which incidentally I think is incorrect, but he's been doing it anyway. He's adopted kid. He's been calling him Ploini ben Ploini Hashem Magadlai, but that's correct at least. I'm calling him. He's Ploini. He doesn't have a father. His father's a guy. Or, I don't know who the father is. So I call him Ploini de Miskeri. The Gabbai's calling him. Ploini, Ben Ploini. That's not really Ben Ploini. That's not really his name, but they call him that. That's what the mystery is, like a red flag. It tells you what's coming afterwards isn't really the name, it's something else. Now, in the case, one other problem with this. That's all true. Who is ever, in this is in Russia, remember. In this country, who uses a patronym, father's name? Limited number of people. The Moyo, the Gabbai in Shul, the Rov is Masada the Ksuba, and the Matseva Mata. Right? Do people call him Ben Ploini at all? This guy who's never been in the Shul. He hasn't been called Ben Ploini by anybody until we come to the Chuppah. Now they forget about the Bris. I don't know what happened to the Bris. But the Rov now is going to call him Ben Ploini for the first time. So Rav Libus in the Beis Ovi, you probably have it in the package. He says you have to be careful. If you're going to call him Ploini, the mystery, Ploini ben Ploini, he's called that. If he gets an Aliyah every Monday and Thursday, and the Gabbai calls him that, it's fine. He's mystery, Ploini ben Ploini. But he's never been in the shul, he never had an Aliyah. He was never called Ploini ben Ploini. It's a lie. Somebody else, it can't be him. He was never called Ploini ben Ploini. You come and you're telling me now that the adopted father wants his name here, but you're using a name that was never, you know, the Ploini ben Ploini, was never used for this person. That becomes a problem. If we go back to the father being non-Jewish and deal with that, there's really a very simple etza, and that is, you write, Reuven ben Sora, if that's his mother's name. You use the name of the mother, and that's like what you should be doing, l'chatchila. In the case of a goy, that is clearly the correct way. In the case of an adopted Jewish child, and you don't know the name of the natural father, so Reb Moshe in one place says to write, Reuven ben mi shenishtakach shemoy, v'nikro ben ploini shegidloy. Reuven ben Mishin Eshtakach Shumay is correct. It's closed adoption. We don't know who the father is. It's forgotten. Nobody knows who the father is. V'nikro ben Ploini Shegidloi. I would prefer V'nikro Reuven ben Ploini Shegidloi. That I think would be more accurate. Then in another place where he was dealing with a non-Jewish father, he suggests using the name, in this case it was a girl, Ba She Sora Shehechzik Atzmo B'Shem Ben Yehoshua. I would prefer Shehechzik Atzmo Kibas Yehoshua, which is now a variation. If you're dealing with an adoption and you want the name of the adoptive parent, you write Ploini Shehechzik Atzmo or Atzmo Kiben, whoever the adoptive parent is. That says it clearly. If it's, she was master herself as this person's daughter or son, not really the daughter or the son. Now, if you take all of those together, you can have additional variations. You can then write Ploini Shehechzik Atzmo B'Shem Ploini Ben Ploini Shegidloi, which is probably the most accurate. Or you can write, most descriptive, I should say, in terms of accuracy. Or, Ploini ben Mi Shenishtakach Shmoy, V'Hechzik Esatzmoy B'Shem Ploini ben Ploini Shegidlo, which is a mouthful, but spells out in even greater detail. Or, Ploini Shehechzik Atzmoy Ki ben Ploini, which is the shorter version of the saying. If I've confused you sufficiently, you now know that it's not simple. But there's a problem with regard to what you do in these cases, and you can, you know, pick from among these. Yes?
Are you saying this is only now, but it's actually written in Shnar, let's say, after the or whatever you want?
in the chuppah, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to read anything. Turn off the microphone. We'll talk about microphones later. I recommend turning off the microphone in general. But you know, leaving it on for Kriya Saksuba in this kind of a case, so you're talking to your beard. Draw one. You might be at it. Yes.
Do you need to read the Palestine at all? I mean, if you have the father's and the adopted father doesn't care, can you just write?
What do you write? Ben what?
Ben Mishni Shabbat Shema.
That's fine.
And without mentioning the father's name at all.
You can write, that's fine. You can write Pliny Ben Mishni Shabbat Shema. Now, generally, we do have a problem with just writing Pliny alone, because that's an indication that he's a Shtuki or a Sufi or some kind or other, and there may be shyness afterwards in terms of, I'm not talking about a second zivu when Masada Kedushin is afraid that he's also the call, but in terms of collecting the ksuba, this is a ksuba of a shtuki, you're not a shtuki, so what kind of business is this? So that's why you use the mother's name generally. If you don't have a doctor, you don't know the mother's name altogether. So if you write plainly Ben Mishnishtaka Shemoy, that is the best solution under the circumstances. You don't have any problems at all. My problem, the point of all of this was to say...
Why isn't that
a Shtuki? Sorry? Mishnishtaka Shemoy doesn't mean a Shtuki. A Shtuki, I never knew the father. A Shtuki, we know who the father was. You can say, look, I should have helped. But Mishnishtaka Shemoy means we forgot. No, we forgot lots of things. He was a Yisrael kosher, and I forgot his name. It's not a sin. It doesn't sound like a Shtuki. That's fine. The problem is psychologically. You have to understand what's going on here. You have a person, he feels he's a father. He raised the child from birth. And now suddenly this cruel rabbi is telling him he's not a father. That's why I began by saying you can't live a lie. In other words, once upon a time, I'll say it, B'Shem Omer, the Reader's Digest. It was in the early stage of open adoption. So they had one of these, I don't know, it was a joke, a real life story. You have, and it happens, not infrequently, you adopt a child, and then suddenly the mother becomes pregnant. That's the good medical reasons for that, psychological reasons, whatever happens. So you have an adopted child whose mother now has to inform the child that there's going to be another little brother or sister. And the gist of the spiel is that the child said, oh, this poor baby, I was chosen, but this one wasn't, because they've been drumming into the child that the child was chosen, after all, it was adopted. Now, the child felt privileged to be adopted. It doesn't have to be a psychological burden. Once upon a time, they thought that this was a burden. Don't ask me why, whatever. And the result is you had problems. These are the problems. Probably the least severe or significant of the problems. But, of course, there are problems. If you're honest about it up front, there's no trauma when the kid finds out, when he's a teenager, that he was adopted. If you treat it as a matter of fact, and, you know, this is salavi, then, of course, the children can take it in stride. The hardest thing to take is the lie. Lies are always hard to take in stride. I think it's the healthiest thing. But you've got the parents who want to be recognized as the parents, and that's the problem. That's why you have all of these halakhic gymnastics to be able to write a ksuba that should satisfy the parents and still be kosher. Not easy, okay? Now, I unfortunately can't go over time because it's supposed to be a chabur in the Kol HaRoah. But for next time, I want to begin with the way you write cities, etc., etc. Not the transliteration, but the problem of whether you write Mosa, how you write Mosa, etc., and complete whatever we have to do with the Ksuba, and then go directly to the Chuppah itself, and the Shailas of the Chuppah, and the problems of the Chuppah. Okay, so that'll be next time.